Hi, and welcome back. I'm Simi Lerner, and this is Judaism from Within, trying to appreciate Judaism from its own perspective, through the lens of Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. This week is a tricky and exciting week at the same time. Exciting because it's a challenge. Tricky because of the nature of the subject. We're going to be discussing sexual immorality. Now, before I begin, this is the next commandment in Rav Hirsch's work Chorev. Zinus, a sexual ethic. What do I mean by tricky? That's worth pointing out at the beginning, because there's two directions someone can take a discussion on a sexual ethic. One, lean on the left or lean into the right. Lean into the left would be to contextualize everything, to not have any grounded decisions out of fear of offending someone. And there's good reason for that. You shouldn't want to offend people. And the cost would be, if I leaned into the left, would be a cost on the authenticity, my commitment to the Torah. That would be perhaps a more left-leaning liberal reform approach to a topic like this. And the reasoning would be quite legitimate to an extent. You don't want to offend people, especially in a cultural climate where sexual mores and sexual expression is far more open than it was 50, 60, 100, 200 years ago. Thereby, any sort of grounded sexual ethic on the morality of sex is going to come across as being slightly old, perhaps even slightly backward. So a person in a community such as that would lean into that side of things. But on the other extreme, a person would lean in onto the right, recognize the push from the left, recognize the push not to offend, and just completely counter it, lay down the Torah's decision, lay down the way the Torah explicitly forbids certain actions, no context, but do it unapologetically, almost inviting someone, try me, criticize something, show me how you are just not able to accept the Torah's law. I had someone recently I was having a conversation with, and he very much took this approach, but he took this approach in any area of the Torah that would seem difficult for us to understand, difficult to us to incorporate, from genocide to slavery. And his point was, no, we shouldn't apologize. Now, obviously, I agree, you shouldn't apologize. I don't think he appreciated the distinction between making an apology and apologetics. Now, I think both these approaches are theologically wrong, as in, I think both of these approaches end with a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name. How so? The left? Well, that's quite easy to understand. You compromise your worldview, you compromise your values in the face of culture. You shouldn't do that. You should have the language and the skill to be able to explicitly describe where you stand, and at the same time be able to hold your head up high, even if you're against the going cultural trends. But on the right side, the reason why that is wrong and illegitimate, and theologically just askew, is that leaning in on the other direction, because of the fear of compromise, also ends with you being a bad person. You become a heartless, you become a simplistic person in the face of the wisdom and the beauty of the Torah. So perhaps let me open with this. When we talk about morality, and this I think is the key problem that ends up emerging in the language of sex and a secular culture, is that when religious people talk about a sexual immorality, they use the language of morality. Now, a person would say, obviously, that's the point. Yes, but a person from a Jewish standpoint has to be very explicit. And this is where Rav Hirsch's vision comes into play. There are two categories. There are mishpatim and there are chukim. Mishpatim are the ones we understand. Classically, we put into the basin of morality. That is, when I hit you in the face, when I steal your wallet. Those things I know are wrong, and I don't need the Torah to tell me these are wrong. What do I mean, I don't need the Torah? The Torah's own perspective on these things are they are understandable by humanity, because I'm a human being, and I understand why doing these things to you are wrong. But when it comes to chukim, they are also based off justice. That's also important to point out. They're also based off a certain factor of justice, but the other elements I am unaware of. Why shouldn't I mix species together? Why should I send away the mother bird? Why should I, and so on and so on. These are the laws in the Torah that are, from our point of view, based off justice, but their premises are not accessible to us. We don't know the exact reason why certain species shouldn't be mixed, why I can't wear shatness, We don't know the reasons for these because we don't have all the premises in front of us. I don't know them because I'm another human being. I know them purely on my commitment to God. So, when a person uses the language of morality in one area and then transports it to the other area, you do a disservice to the Torah because you're using the emotional weight of one and piling it onto the other. You say the word immoral. Well, you mean like Lashon Hara is immoral, not the way eating bugs is immoral. Yes, they both share a common moral thread that if you're committed to these ideas, they are given to you by the creator of existence, by the source of being. But you have to be explicit, because if you carry the weight of one where it doesn't belong, you're not doing justice to the Torah. So if we had to be explicit, we would say that a person's punching of another in the face, that is immoral because I'm a human being and I understand what it means by being a human being not to do certain things, as well as it was commanded by God. When it comes to chukim, I don't have the first stage. I have only the second stage, which means when I say that being intimate with someone the Torah tells you is completely forbidden, the immorality lies in not abiding by your task that was given to you by the Almighty. Now, if you're not committed to those ideas, you wouldn't use the language of morality. But if you are committed to those ideas, the language of morality is as potent, is as well placed. Does that make sense? So with that idea in mind, that when we talk about chukim and mishpatim, we're talking about different areas of Jewish law, yes, unified by God's command, but from the emotional standpoint, how we articulate them, it really does matter. Especially when it comes to sexuality. This is an idea that Rav Hirsch emphasizes in the next commandment, that when it comes to these areas, our ability to give reasons for them is doubly difficult. Because when I'm talking about mixing species, I can talk about symbolism, I can talk about how ideas relate to other ideas in the context of the Torah in general, but when it comes to areas of life and death, where both these areas are a mystery to begin with, on a theological level, to start giving reasons, it is even more difficult, and even more tentative. So with that in mind, with our introduction, let's go through Rav Hirsch's explanation. So to begin, there are three goals. There are three purposes of a union in general, according to Jewish law. The first is to build a home. The second is to have children. The third is to educate those children. And this is done in the overarching framework that we call Kiddushin. With that being said, to talk about anything that draws us towards a union has to be in aid of one of these three goals in the context of Kiddushin. Now, I understand this will sound circular because I'm not giving a reason why the Torah has prohibitions against certain intimate relationships. Because that's never the goal. The goal here isn't to explain why the commandment's there. The goal is to explain, once you have the commandment, how can you then invest it with a spirit? How can you then invest it with meaning? But the premises that you're given is what you have to work with. No one is ever justifying the premises. So the premises that we've got here are the building of a home, the having children, and educating those children in the context of Kiddushin. Thereby, the next step is that anything that leads towards this goal is a means to an end, in which case, pleasure, the drive, the desire to be with another in this context, if it is an aid or a means to a greater end, a transcendent end, in the Torah's eyes, then it's legitimate and it's celebrated and it's encouraged. But if it's not in the pursuit of this specific ends, the context of Kiddushin, the building of a home, the having of children, and the education of those children, if it is not in pursuit of any one of those, it shifts from being a means to an ends. In which case, if you have a human experience that is now an ends, but isn't a means to a higher goal, then from the Torah standpoint, that is a problem. That is what it calls an act that is forbidden. But this pattern plays itself in any area of Jewish life. In any area of life, and this is where the distinction between a religion in the classical sense and religion and how Judaism experiences it, within Judaism, you don't have, I don't know, your religious life and your secular life. The Torah doesn't split your life up. The Torah gives a perspective on how a Jew exists in the world, in the context of his mission, in which case, anything in my life that I use as an ends, or focus on the ends, but don't use as a means to the greater striving that I'm supposed to be involved with, that becomes problematic fundamentally. So, take the eating of food. If eating of food becomes an ends, not a means, then I've skewed my relationship with the divine and the relationship to myself. If I enjoy food because I enjoy food, but it's not in the pursuit, and this I might do, but it wouldn't be legitimate from the standpoint of the Torah, because it is not in the pursuit of a higher goal. Now, obviously, you don't have to always do this actively, because in a weird, strange sort of way, it'll become paradoxical, because if you're constantly pursuing something as a means towards a greater ends, but you only focus on the ends, you don't actually get the benefit of the means. But that's a different conversation. But in the terms, in the sense of sexual union, if the sexual union is not in the pursuit of this goal, then it's not okay from the Torah standpoint. The same way eating, if it's not in the pursuit of a higher goal, it itself becomes the ends. And that, from a Jewish standpoint, is problematic, because the minute something becomes the ends and is no longer a means to our higher goal, you're kind of worshipping it, because that's what we mean by idolatry on a very fundamental level. If I eat, but because I enjoy food, but not in the pursuit of a higher goal, then the eating becomes, or the pleasure I gain from eating, becomes my ends. In which case, my relationship to God gets skewed, my relationship to my mission gets skewed, my relationship to myself, my relationship to others, all get skewed because I no longer have the highest good, the calling of the Torah as my ends. I have my own personal desires as the ends. Now, this is the slippery slope that is expressed through shifting your perspective on what is a means and what is an ends. And that plays itself out in many areas of Jewish life, but most potently, for our discussion, in the area of a sexual union. If it is in the pursuit of Kiddushin, the building of a home, the having of children, and the education of those children, as the ends, what leads to that is sanctified. What leads to that is considered the greatest. But if it is not, well then, it's not considered legitimate. It's considered shifting the means and the ends. And to try and think of a very benign case, you had a situation specifically within the area of inappropriate relationships. If you have strange siblings, never met each other and then met and didn't know they were siblings, and they fall into a beautiful relationship where they wanted to build a home together. They wanted to be able to join in a union and make a beautiful family. And then before they got married, they realized that they were actually related. Kiddushin wouldn't work. Remember that premise at the beginning? Kiddushin would not be, as they describe it from a legal standpoint, chal. You wouldn't be able to get married. You wouldn't be able to be in this union of Kiddushin, which is a prerequisite to this goal. In which case, however much love, however much genuine connection would exist there, it wouldn't be something that would be able to fall under that framework. In which case, it would be a problem. It would fall under the category of znus, under the category of Arias, under the category of a relationship that is forbidden. So, to recap our discussion, we spoke about the relationship between language and how we distinguish between chukim and mishpatim, and how that's important, because when a Jew is being an ambassador to the Torah, he has to be the best ambassador he can be. And that means not going to either extreme, however comfortable it might be. We spoke about the context of the Torah in the terms of how it lays down its premises. And the goal of Tamei HaMitzvahs isn't to justify the premises, but is to add a spirit to the law in the sense that, and understand it, add meaning to the law once you have the premises in front of you. That is the goal. And what did we describe? We said anything that is in the pursuit of this higher goal, this threefold goal, any stage of this threefold goal, in the context of Kiddushin, what drives one towards that is going to be legitimate. But if it is not, like any other drive, being treated as the ends, not the means, well then, that won't be legitimate from the lens of the Torah. As always, thank you so much for your time, and have a lovely week.